You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Mark Hamrick joins us again, the Washington Bureau Chief and the Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate. Let's just talk about a couple of numbers that we've heard a little bit about this week, starting with jobless claims. Mark, what's on your radar there?
Good to be with you, John. I may violate the Larry David maxim of still wishing a Happy New Year here on the 9th of January, so it goes. But to your question, we had the jobless claims release on Wednesday because of the National Day of Mourning, so a day earlier than usual, so we got to digest that a bit earlier. And it went down rather smoothly in the sense this was better than expected news. We saw jobless claims, which are a proxy for fresh job loss, at the lowest level since last February. Now, could there be some weird seasonal things going on with this? Perhaps, but we've had a number that's been trending lower for some time. So down 10,000 to 201,000. We also watch continuing claims, of course, which are associated with essentially the ongoing need for jobless benefits. And they're still elevated a bit, but I think overall, this is kind of a lower hiring, lower firing job environment, and that is sort of a steady as she goes approach, which I think, you know, during volatile times we would tend to appreciate.
So inflation and interest rates are two numbers that we have been following microscopically the last year or two. The unemployment rate doesn't seem to resonate as much because it's been so comfortably low, almost too low. What do you make of, but just speak to that. Is unemployment at 4.2% a concern?
So the reason we would have concern about it would be if it were generating inflation itself and the job market is not seen as a significant trigger for inflation. We have a sense that inflation, of course, has been too sticky for our tastes and too much for the taste of the Federal Reserve. And obviously, consumers are aggravated by the continuance of elevated prices. And we're going to be stuck with some of these situations, I think, for quite some time, whether it's the lack of affordability for purchasing a home, whether it's access to an affordable automobile. The insurance costs are difficult. The property tax part of the home ownership piece can often be difficult. So I think that we're relatively comfortable with where the job market is in the sense that it has gone back to a pre-pandemic condition. One thing within the job openings report that we got earlier this week was that even as job openings rose more than expected, we also saw fewer people quitting their jobs voluntarily, and that is often watched for a sign of, let's say, job market confidence or career confidence. So people may not be quite as confident as they were before, but I would say that is also to be associated with the kind of normalization of the job market we've been talking about.
Do you have any thoughts or information about wages in general? Because that's the other side of the inflation.
Of course. First of all, we'll get an update on that tomorrow morning with the release of the national employment situation. And average hourly earnings are a component of that, don't tend to draw quite the literal headlines that other parts of the report do. But that has recently been at a roughly 4% annual increase. We also had data from the payroll processing firm ADP earlier this week that indicated that wage growth is still a part of the picture. Nationally, their number is up 4.6% for those who are essentially staying with the same job, and those who are changing jobs are getting something just slightly north of a 7% annual increase. So, you know, we're not encouraging anybody to necessarily jump ship, but that tends to be the way that people get the biggest pay increases, is to get a new job. And I would note, John, that, you know, we did a survey late last year about individuals' outlook for the new year and what they were thinking about their personal finances. And people were more optimistic than they have been in years past. And one of their priorities, along with paying down debt and trying to save more for emergencies, was to seek a new job or to get additional income. So this is an environment where people can, I think, broadly speaking, leverage a firm job market. Obviously, it depends on where one is seeking a job, not only geographically, but within certain sectors. If you're an AI expert, this is the time to seize that opportunity. Other sectors may or may not present such grand opportunities.
Mark Hamrick is the Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate. We've been talking about some of the germane numbers in the new year. What about what the Fed has been saying, said this week, Mark?
Yeah, there's been a lot of Fed speak of late, meaning officials essentially out on the stump talking about what they see the environment as being right now. And we had the release of the minutes of the most recent meeting, and we have another announcement due on January 29th. I think the bottom line is that investors through the futures markets are projecting a more than 90% chance that the Fed will not cut rates at this meeting. And the minutes that we got this week also indicated that a majority of policymakers thought that rates are still, in their words, meaningfully restrictive, meaning they are still sort of applying pressure on the economy to try to wring out the remaining amount of inflation. We'll see how successful they can be. And they think that they can be cautious with respect to future rate moves. So what does all this mean for all of us? Number one, as you indicated before the break, rates are determined not only by central banks, but also by the marketplace. And we've seen the benchmark yield of the 10-year Treasury move up since the election. That's based on the expectation that the new administration will be essentially trying to accelerate the economy, and there may or may not be success with that because there could be mitigating impacts through tariffs and mass deportations. And that's why the Fed is, I think, at this point, essentially taking a wait-and-see approach to see, you know, how much policy comes, let's say, on day one or shortly thereafter, and then what the impacts on the economy will be. One Federal Reserve Board Governor, Christopher Waller, said that he does not think that the administration's policy will have a meaningful impact with respect to inflation itself. And that's, of course, I think, you know, with the best interests of the American people in mind, to identify inflation as the chief economic ill during the general election.
So does that imply that tariffs or lower taxes on businesses aren't going to somehow be inflationary?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the Trump tax cut, which, you know, would be essentially something to be addressed after the end of this year. If indeed members of Congress agree on continuing the tax cuts, that simply means that tax policy remains where it has been,
right?
Because otherwise there's a tax increase set to take effect. So this we're not talking about rerunning the playbook from 2017, because we're not talking about a change from the status quo. We're talking about maintaining the status quo. But of course, the other parts of the policy being, you know, how much of the tariff situation is a threat or a potential negotiating tool, we just frankly don't know that. And we certainly don't know how it would be implemented, whether universally or, you know, surgically. So I think that's just, that's very much part and parcel of the wait and see approach. But what we can absolutely identify is what the current situation is. And that means that, as we heard in the business update earlier this hour, the bank rate average for the 30-year fixed rate mortgage, focusing on our metric of that, is back above 7%. And, you know, home prices across the country have continued to rise. So the good news is you can still get a good rate on savings of, let's say, 4% with a high yield savings account. The bad news is you're still going to get socked with a better than 20% or worse than 20% rate with respect to your credit card debt.
I suppose, though, the bright side of all of that, as you just said, is that you can guarantee close to 5% on your money. And if you don't want it in the market, or if for some reason you need to start taking money and putting it in your hand, you could invest it in very safe vehicles, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the market maven survey that we do quarterly at Bankrate indicated an expectation that market returns, let's say from the stock market, both over the next year and over the next 5 years, will not be anything like what we've seen over the previous couple. Obviously, predicting that is almost impossible, but that's just sort of saying, you know, things should probably get back to a more normal situation. So if you're looking at the highest yields for whether it's a CD or even just a regular high yield savings account, you can beat the rate of inflation with that and also have something through a federally insured account that gives you the confidence that that money is safe and that will not go down in the event of a stock market downturn, because we know that with economic cycles going through expansions and recessions and stock market behavior going through bull and bear markets, one of the things that can be among the most predictable things is the rates paid on savings, especially if you're locking in on a on a CD.
And I also wonder if people can eat around inflation. It's too bad that we love eggs and cereal in the morning, because eggs remain very sticky, and breakfast cereal, my box of cereal the other day, when I can find it, is like $7. I know you can get generic versions of a lot of cereal. Maybe you can find cheaper eggs, or you can not have eggs, but people will tell you they feel the pinch at the grocery store still.
Well, I would just say that's within the context of affordability challenges across the board. And there are a lot of things that have outsized impacts that are not anywhere near as, let's say, negligible as a mere carton of eggs, which is not, in theory, going to knock a household's budget out of whack, but a sharp increase in, let's say, car insurance costs or property taxes, or if, Lord forbid, people had a variable rate mortgage, you know, those are the things that can really matter. And John, we will be up, by the way, a little tease here. In the next week or so, we'll be updating our emergency savings survey, which every year we look at to find out how many people in America are living paycheck to paycheck. And I can tell you it's not getting any better. And inflation has been one of the irritants with respect to that. So the way to try to self-insure in this situation with respect to our personal finances is to prioritize savings. And it might mean that you got to go with oatmeal, which is significantly less expensive and has less sugar than let's say, the tried and true, you know, Wheaties or cornflakes or whatever it might be.
You mentioned variable rate mortgages. Are banks still issuing those? Is that much of the business, or maybe people had them before the rates changed so much?
Yeah, I mean, still a relatively small part of the mortgage application or processing business. I think the best argument for them would be for someone who thinks that they are only going to be in a home for a relatively short amount of time. And there are people in those situations where maybe they envision only being, you know, in that ownership situation for a compressed period. But, you know, I do think that there's a reasonable likelihood that higher rates of some kind are here to stay. Mm-hmm. And when we asked, for example, folks in our economist survey that we just published this week, they really did look for mortgage rates to be relatively elevated for the near future. They looked for the 30-year fix to be at 6.25% by the end of this year, and the average for the full year basically being at about 6.5%. So that's going to be a challenge.
But I was thinking about variable rate mortgages. When you get one of those, you get it at a discount, but you maybe aren't going to live in that house beyond 5 years when it would elevate itself. But is there much of a discount for a variable rate mortgage now? You're not getting a huge discount, are you?
Yeah, I would typically advise against it, simply unless someone, for example, has a high degree of financial resources available, because the risk is that if rates spike, you're going to get stuck when they adjust. And so there's a very good reason why the 30-year fixed rate mortgage has been doing the yeoman's part of the business over these many years, and the discount that you get is probably not going to be that significant for your personal finances. I would argue that for people who are on the edge with respect to affording a home purchase, they're better off not necessarily waiting for lower rates, although, you know, as we just said, the expectation is we could see lower mortgage rates by the end of the year ever so slightly. But I would rather see people save more money for the inevitable expense of, you know, whether it's a roof repair, HVAC, because as we've discussed in the past, affordability isn't just about qualifying for the down payment. It's also managing the ongoing expenses of home ownership, which many people fail to plan for because they're so focused on walking over that threshold for the very first time that they forget that, you know, there are other expenses that are going to come into play.
My colleague who writes a lot of mortgages here, David Hochberg, says, oh, hell, buy the house. 7% buy the house. It's not going to go down a lot anytime soon. And in the meantime, you're losing a lot of the advantages of home ownership, like equity building. So that's something.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. Yeah, I mean, and we're, I think, John, you and I are of a generation that that we can remember purchasing a home when we had double-digit mortgage rates, and I felt like my life was going just fine back then. But you know, that's not going to make younger people feel any better.
Mark Hamrick is the Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate. Happy New Year. I don't care what they say. Bankrate.com. Thank you, Mark.
Always a great pleasure, John. Thanks so much. Take good care.
You bet. We are joined now by Emily Stewart, a Senior Correspondent at Business Insider. Here's a headline, Trump's election and politics fuel how Americans feel about the economy. That's your story, right, Emily?
Indeed, that is.
And I suppose that story could be written about any president almost any time. That is, the election and the political climate and what the politicians are saying and the media is reporting is going to be how we consume our feelings about the economy. Is that true of any president at any time, or is there something novel here?
I mean, it's true to some extent, right? Like, we know that when consumers say whether or not they think the economy is good or bad, that often has to do with who is in the White House, what political party is in power. When Democrats are in the White House, and generally Democrats tend to say they feel a lot better about the economy. On the flip side, when Republicans are in the White House, Republicans say they feel better about the economy. Now, it's important to notice, it's not just they're waving their flag. It's that, you know, if I'm a Republican and I know Donald Trump is coming to the White House in a couple of weeks, you know, I feel really good that he's going to help me on inflation, that his tariffs are going to be good for my job. If I'm a Democrat, I don't feel that way. But what we also know is that this partisan divide has gotten more extreme over the past, you know, maybe 20, 40 years. Whereas maybe in 1992, yes, there was a partisan divide, but the flip wasn't as extreme and as fast as it is now. I know that's been true in 2016, in 2020, and now again in 2024. Now it's 2025.
We weren't as siloed, I would say, in those periods of time, too. So even if you didn't like Bush or Clinton or whoever the president has been over the last few years, it seemed like the media wasn't as much in the crosshairs as the politicians were. Now we're divided even about the people who report on the politicians who divide us. You interviewed the director of the Yale Budget Lab. What is that, and what did that person say?
Yeah, but I talked to Ernie Tedeschi. He's at the Yale Budget Lab at Yale University, and he worked in the Biden White House, which is important to note, on the White House Council of Economic Advisors. You know, when I called him, I said, hey, do you think the vibe session was fake? If we think about the last couple of years, the big question for a lot of economists, for a lot of politicians, for a lot of people has been, even if on paper the economy is good, why does everybody say it's bad? That's the vibe session. And he kind of burst out laughing at me, and he said, no, the vibe session is not fake. That was real. People said they felt bad, but. And the but here is really that the way you feel about the economy isn't just, the economy is not its own thing. So when you think about how you feel about the economy, there are so many different things that can go into that. And, you know, we also know in the past couple of years, people have been saying, my personal financial situation is okay. You know, yes, I'm upset about inflation. Like, I'm doing okay. But also, I think the country's economy is bad. And so I think sometimes when we talk about the economy, it's important to remember it's not some, you know, nebulous thing. It is something that we live in every day. But also, you know, when somebody says the economy is bad, they might really mean, well, I feel like Joe Biden is too old to be president, or I don't like that Donald Trump's about to be president, or I think tariffs are going to be bad. We don't always know exactly what people mean when they say things are good or bad.
Yeah. And yet they have a legitimate, honest-to-goodness feeling about that. And it doesn't seem, I put it this way, Democrats weren't able to persuade people that that feeling was ill-formed. That is, if you feel bad, you feel bad. The economist I saw last week said that no president has been handed a cleaner plate than Donald Trump is. And I don't know that that's kudos necessarily to Joe Biden, but clearly he didn't screw things up. Donald Trump is going to get about as good an economy and it is about as good a domestic set of affairs as any president has ever been handed. But a lot of the country either didn't believe that, or even if they heard that and somewhat believed it, they didn't want Joe Biden to be president anymore. But I get caught up in this conversation about how the numbers say one thing and the people say something else. I guess this is a political discussion as much as an economic one. How are politicians supposed to persuade people that things are good when they don't seem to believe it?
I mean, I think that is the tough part, and we've definitely seen Democrats have not been able to do that. You know, I think, and this is something I think about quite a bit, is we have to remember the last 4 or 5 years have been really tumultuous. We went through a global pandemic. A lot of people saw inflation that they have never seen before in their lives, and it's hard to say, well, the problem is inflation, but a lot of it really has been inflation and prices. And I think it is hard to internalize, you know, even for me, and I think about this stuff for a living, that yes, inflation has slowed down, but prices are not coming down. Those 2019 prices aren't coming back. And I think if anybody had a magic wand to say, now everybody will be happy about the economy, they would wave it. You know, I think the Democrats have spent the last 4 years trying to figure this out. But it is a tough one. And, you know, sometimes I wonder if the answer is just the more distance we get from those 2019 prices, the better people will feel, because people are making more money as well. But also, you know, when your paycheck goes up, a lot of the time you think that's only about you. And of course, you're doing a lovely job. But they don't realize this is also macroeconomic factors that mean the labor market is more competitive and your job has to pay you more. So, you know, it's hard, and you also can't tell people, you know, you feel bad, but I promise things are good. And I think that's kind of the line that everybody's been trying to figure out.
That's the buzzsaw. That's the buzzsaw that I think Democrats, Joe Biden particularly, ran into. And I think another then question for politicians or policymakers is, now that we're going to have this transition, should you necessarily change the course on these macroeconomic levers, or should you, now that you've got control of them, leave them kind of where they are and then take credit for what has been going fairly smoothly all along, or at least for the last year or so? This is not a directive to change course. It may have gotten you elected by telling people things are terrible, but things aren't. And just go ahead and continue to keep the bus on the road and everything will be fine. I wonder if, in fact, the new administration really is going to change things much, or should change things much?
I mean, that's a good question. I'm not the way I'm not Donald Trump. I mean, I think that is a big question. You know, if you're Trump, you've come in saying you're going to put broad-based tariffs and all of these goods. And you know, we've seen reporting this week from the Washington Post saying that maybe Trump was going to pare back the tariffs. So, of course, Trump is denying that. So I do think we're kind of in a little bit of wait and see mode. You know, Trump also said he was going to do mass deportations. That obviously would have an impact on a lot of immigrants who support a lot of industries that you know, people depend on for their livelihood. So I really do think this is a moment of wait and see mode in a lot of ways, you know, politically and in the economy, and those things are always intertwined.
You talked to the director of consumer surveys at the University of Michigan. And here again, I think those people come up with data sometimes, but the question is, what should we do about them? But just in general, summarize what you heard from that person, Joanne Sue.
Yeah, I mean, so basically we've heard from her, you know, sentiment was really low in about 2022. It's gotten better. It's still not great, and there are varying explanations for what's going on. I mean, some people say maybe the fact that they're doing the surveys online means people are more negative online. So we really are not entirely sure. But what she did say is that we see this partisan flip. So basically right now, if you are a Democrat and you're talking about your economic expectations, what they're hearing from people is they are worried about where the economy is going. And it's not because they just don't like Donald Trump. It's because they're worried that tariffs are going to make things more expensive for them. A lot of them are saying, you know, if I'm going to buy a car, I should do it now instead of in May.
Yeah.
As the flip side is Republicans are saying they feel pretty good. They think things are going to get better because they think the tariffs are going to be good for them, because they think whatever happens with immigration is going to be good for them. And so it's not just people, again, like I said before, waving their partisan flag. Is that people really do expect, based on kind of their policy positions and their political priors, they think that things will be different for better or for worse.
I don't remember if it was a washing machine or a stove or an oven, but somebody on this radio station wondered out loud the other day, maybe I ought to hurry up and go buy it. I need one, and I'd better get it now before the tariffs come and jack up the price 20%. We don't know what's going to happen, but I understand why people are worried about that. And you can read more about that in Emily Stewart's Business Insider piece, Trump's Election Politics Fuel, How America Feels About the Economy. Nice to talk to you today, Emily. Thanks for your insight.
Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The new St. Grand apartment building in Chicago's Streeterville neighborhood will be home to a new boutique health club. Club Studio Fitness will lease portions of the first, fourth, and fifth floors of the building at 535 North St. Clair. It's the newest brand from California-based Fitness International, the company that operates LA Fitness. Club Studio Fitness will offer spinning, boxing, and Pilates. According to Cranes, the club will also offer other luxury wellness amenities. The St. Grand Apartments opened last April and is 95% occupied. The company that runs hot tub boats on the Chicago River is expanding. The Chicago Electric Boat Company added two new boats in December and will launch two more next month. That'll bring its armada to six boats. The company says the new boats are bigger and faster than the originals. They're also easier to steer and are more stable. The plan is to have four boats operating in the river at once. A 90-minute rental now costs $300 on weekdays and $425 on weekends. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food now. This is Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And what's this now? Some social media influencer says we should put garlic up our nose?
No. You're not supposed to put garlic up your nose.
Why we are talking about that and who that is, after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, just as Meta decided to no longer make sure everything posted on its platforms is true, a Chicago-based food company came out with a survey of 3,000 people nationwide, showing a lot of us are confused about what we see online about food.
7 out of 10 people are seeing conflicting information online, so they don't know what to believe, what choices to make. And in our survey, 64% of people reported that they're more worried about what foods are safe to eat than they were 5 years ago. And it was in what we're calling a food infodemic.
That's Tia Raines, a VP at Ajinomoto, a global food company with U.S. headquarters in Itasca. She says much of the misinformation comes from social media.
And it's breeding the confusion around not only what to eat, but it's impacting the relationship with different cuisines and negatively impacting, unfortunately, certain cuisines.
Yeah, social media brings out the ugly in people, even when it comes to food.
We've found that it's really people of color and people from different regions of the world here in the U.S. that feel this the most. The fact that, you know, people from those cultures are feeling demonized or having their food be made fun of or feeling that just xenophobia is unfortunate and inconsistent with, I think, how most people should feel about food, which is it's enjoyable, it supports their health, and it helps them understand, you know, different parts of the world and different cultures.
And just because some influencer tells you to do something, don't.
30% of people were more likely to put garlic up their nose than they were to check if they were a credentialed expert that was spewing this information. So only 25% of people will check online if the person that is giving out food and nutrition information is qualified.
Be careful out there. On the food calendar, it's National Apricot Day. Please do not put one of those up your nose. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
And let's just talk a little bit about a pretty good idea in the northern part of our listening area. Anika Zisman is the marketing strategist for Two Men and a Truck. Up Northbrook way, they've got a food campaign going on. Anika, you're on WGN. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Real quick, two men in a truck. What's your business? What do you all do?
So we specialize in moving, and we also partnered up with our sister company, so Two Men and a Junk Truck. So we do both of those, and we can do anything from long distance to short distance moves. We also do storage that is climate controlled. We have packing and unpacking services. And we can do at residential homes or commercial or really anything. There's no limits to what we do.
Is it really two men, or is it a whole crew of guys?
A lot of people think it's just two men in a truck, literally, but it's a whole crew of guys.
And is it for people that are making short or long-term moves, or is it maybe for the estate sale, or somebody's died in a property, we need to clean and unclutter it before we sell it? Is that the service you do, or is that something else?
So we can do services like that. So we essentially we do home and business moving, local and long distance moving. We also offer ValueFlex created long distancing moving, storage, as I said, packing services and supplies, loading and unloading services, senior moves, delivery services, and we do junk removal as well.
You've got a program called Movers for Meals, and this is if people drop food off at various locations in the Northbrook area. You guys are well equipped to drive around, pick it up, and get it to the local food pantry, right?
Correct. Yep. We partnered with the Northfield Township Food Pantry.
And this is going on now through the end of the month?
Correct. Till the 31st.
And you're going to try and get 1,000 pounds of food. So if I drop it off at the right locations, your trucks will motor about, pick everything up, coordinate it, and get it dropped off.
Yes. So we have boxes at each of our locations, which is Sunset Foods in Northbrook, YMCA Northbrook, the Northbrook Chamber of Commerce, and then Painted Penguin at Hawthorne Mall, which are all the drop-off locations. We have a day at the end of the month where our trucks will come and pick up all those boxes and then take those boxes onto the Northfield Township Food Pantry. And then for people that can't really make it out to those locations, we also have the Amazon wish list on our website. And our social media that has all of the items that we are collecting. And, of course, they're non-perishable items.
Yeah, right. They say when they do these things, peanut butter is the first choice, and it's not always inexpensive. But for the same reason you want it on your shelf, it goes a long way. It's a high-protein source for families. But if you've got non-perishable food items, you can bring to Sunset Foods, the Northbrook Y, Painted Penguin at Hawthorne Mall, Northbrook Chamber of Commerce. Two men in a truck will move those meals through the end of the year. All right. Good on you all, Nika. Thanks for your time. And what's the email address, or pardon me, the website? It would be twomeninatruck.com.
So the website is twomen.com, and the two is spelled out, /Chicago.
Got it. Nika Zisman, marketing strategist over there. Thanks, Nika.
And thank you so much, guys. Take care.